Well, good morning to everybody. Welcome back. We're on vacation. This here is generously sponsored by Mr. and Mrs. J. Kalski on the in honor of the York site of Elliot Aaron Yitzhak Ben Show. There's information that other people want to sponsor. Come over to me after the information on the table. And just a reminder about the shiurim after the Navi shiur, there's going to be a shiur from Mishnayos given right down the hall here by Rabbi Dov Moskowitz, and a shiur in Ian Mizrach Kedushin given upstairs in Ezes Nashim.
Okay, good morning. Welcome back. We are holding at the beginning of the second parak. Parak begins, Vayikrevu Yemei David Lamus, the days of David drew near to his death. Vayitzaveh Shlomo B'nol Neymar, and he commanded his son Shlomo, saying, Chazal bring down that this practice that David is engaging in to give instructions and Musar to Shlomo before he dies is a very proper course of action, and we find similar behavior by a number of other great figures, most prominently Yaakov Avinu. Before he died, gathered all the sons and gave them a bracha, but that bracha really included tochacha and instruction for the future. Moshe Rabbeinu did the same thing before his death. Yoshua did the same thing, and according to some versions, it's not as explicit in the psukim. The same thing was done by Shmuel HaNavi and Avram Avinu. But in any case, Chazal say that there is it's a proper anhaga. A person should give musar primarily before his death. It doesn't mean that there is a mitzvah al cheach tochiach of giving tochacha throughout, but apparently the best time and the time for the heavy duty, the really pressing musar and harsh musar, if you will, should be, if possible, saved for prior to one's death. The Sifri says four reasons for this. The Sifri says that the olam al yochiach adam et beno elokodem misa, a person should only give tochacha to his son before he dies, for four reasons. One is shlo yehei mochiach v'chozer mochiach. He shouldn't have to give tochacha and then repeat the tochacha again, either because the guy didn't listen the first time or because he sees other things that he needs to criticize. It's not clear from the Sifri what's wrong with that. So supposing you do have to give tochacha over and over again, so what? Why is that a problem? The Sifrei Chachamim on Rashi in the beginning of Devarim explains that if you have to give tochacha over again, it won't be accepted because the person thinks you're picking on him. The person thinks that you hate him. Always complaining, always criticizing. Right? You hear these lines. So the more frequently, more often you have to repeat the criticism or to add other criticisms, the less likely it is that the person will accept it because he feels that you're out to get him. The second reason that the Sifri says is Mivnei Habusha. When the person has to face you again and he knows what you have discovered about him, so to speak, and what you have pointed out about him, he'll be embarrassed to face you. The third thing is shelo yehei b'libo alav, that he shouldn't have some tainus on you in his heart. I'm not quite sure the exact difference between that and the first one, at least according to the Sifrei's explanation, but it sounds like he'll have tainus on you. And the fourth one, interestingly enough, is it says that tochacha mevi lidei shalom, tochacha brings peace, and you should always depart from a person with peace. These are the four reasons mentioned in the Sifri. Shaye mochiach v'chozer mochiach, b'mnei habusha, shaye b'libo olav, olav tainus on you, and that tochacha is mevi lidei shalom. And then the Sifri goes on to bring the story of Reuven. Reuven committed some type of a chait involved with the mishkav of his father after Rachel passed away. And Yaakov never said anything to him about him. Before he died, Yaakov gave him tochacha, pachas mayim al tosar. So Reuven said, why didn't you say anything to me until now? And Yaakov said, I was afraid that if I gave you tochacha, you'd be upset and you'd leave me and join Esav. So that's the end of the story. Now, this in and of itself is a tremendous insight into the sensitivity and the delicacy of people, how difficult it is for people to accept mussar, to accept criticism, how careful one has to be when one is giving criticism. And it, I guess on the receiving end, a person has to be aware of your own weaknesses to overcome these tendencies. But here you have Reuven. Reuven was no slouch. Right? Reuven was one of the Shvatim. Reuven would have any tzad, any possibility of joining Esav. Reuven's interested in Esav's philosophy and Esav's lifestyle. So even if he had complaints about Yaakov, that it should go so far that he would leave, abandon Yaakov and join Esav is mind-boggling. Moreover, Reuven himself agreed that he did something wrong. Reuven spent the rest of his life doing tshuva. The Chazal tell us how he used to fast and dressed in sackcloth. And then, you know, the famous story when Reuven told the brothers not to kill Yosef, to throw him in the pit. His plan was to go back later and rescue him. And while he was gone, they sold him. So he never got to institute his plan. But what was he doing? Why was he gone? Says he was gone because he was busy fasting and sitting in sackcloth doing tshuva over his chait. So he himself agreed that he was wrong. So wouldn't you think that if Yaakov told him he was wrong, he would accept it? And yet, Yaakov was afraid. It isn't so simple. So there's a very delicate process. It's not clear to me if the story of Reuven is intended to be a fifth reason or it's included in the first four. In other words, what does this mean? If you give tochacha, a person might abandon you, might be distanced from you. Perhaps that's included in some of the earlier reasons. And it may just be an illustration of the earlier reasons, or maybe it's perhaps a different aspect. But the question that bothered me is, if this is the problem, that people are so delicate and they don't want to take mussar, why does it help to do it before you die? If anything, one might argue it's better to do it earlier where you could kind of repair the damage. Right? You know, you've given him harsh criticism, but then you can be nice to him the next day and be makar of him. But now, this is the last thing he remembers you saying, so what's to stop Reuven from abandoning Yaakov's ways after Yaakov dies? So the Ramban in Parshas Vayechi explains it and says that at the time of a person's death, there's a much greater level of receptivity because the person realizes that you're only telling him the mussar for his own good. There's always this kind of defensiveness, this feeling, you know, perhaps you have your ulterior motives, you think you're superior. At the time of death, first of all, you're much more serious about life because when you're facing death, people realize that life is temporary and there's things more important than our petty jealousies and problems and egos. And you also are less likely to attribute ulterior motives to the person to tell. What does he have to gain? He's dying. So therefore, you're much more receptive. So whereas the same person giving the same mussar in the middle of his life, Reuven perhaps would not have accepted the mussar from Yaakov, but at the time of Yaakov's death, Reuven would accept the mussar. And therefore, it would solve the problem. Another thing that puzzles me about this Sefri is the relationship of, I would say, the fourth reason to the other reasons. The fourth reason is that you should depart from a person with shalom, with peace. Mussar Tochacha brings a person Lidei Shalom. You just finished telling me that Tochacha does the opposite. People have tainus on you, they're embarrassed, they'll think you hate them. So how could you then turn around and say Mussar brings Lidei Shalom? And I think the answer is inherent in this Ramban. When Mussar and Tochacha works, it brings Shalom. When a person accepts the tochacha, and then he will appreciate how you have helped him improve himself. And that will create the deepest bonds of shalom. But if he rejects the tochacha, it has the opposite effect. So it goes together. Since at the time of death, mussar is most accepted, tochacha is most accepted, then you will end up accomplishing the purpose of parting with the person b'shalom. Because he will probably accept the tochacha, and then it will bring shalom. The Gemara tells a story that in the time of the Tanoim yet, I forgot who it was, one of the Tanoim said that in our generation there is nobody who is able to be Mekabel Tochach, to accept criticism. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri said, there is somebody, it's Rabbi Akiva, because a number of times I complained about Rabbi Akiva to Rabbi Gamliel, and he got into trouble, and every time he loved me more. He loved the snitch. But that was Rabbi Akiva. So, but if the Tochacha works, if the person is Mekabel, the Taka brings closeness and shalom and love. So therefore, if you do it at the time of Misa where it's probably going to work, then you'll be departing from the person b'shalom. In the Medrash, there's another version of this same Chazal with a slightly different ending. It also brings four reasons why you should not be you should save the best tochacha for last, for near your death. And it says because of busha, but the fourth reason is different. The fourth reason in this version is shelo yehei mochiach tzarech tochacha, so that the one who is mochiach should not himself require tochacha. Lehodia, to let you know, she'atochacha mevi lidei shalom, tochacha brings to peace. So, again, this presents a difficulty. First of all, what's the problem? If the mochiach needs tochacha, let him get the tochacha. Why should this poor mochiach be deprived of his opportunity to get tochacha? Right. If we're talking about where he doesn't really need the tochacha, the guy is just going to say something in order to complain. Sometimes you have that. You know, you criticize somebody, so he tries to find the criticism back, even though it may not be valid. But that's not. He says, "Machiach tzarich tochacha." He doesn't need tochacha. There it says we're talking about where he does need tochacha. So what's wrong? If tochacha is good, it brings the day shalom, and it brings even more shalom. The guy gives you back the tochacha. And what's the connection? He says, "Shoye amotchiach tzar tochacha lohodia she'atochacha maybe lidei shalom." Now, in light of what we just explained in the Sifri, I think we could explain this medrash as well, a slight variation, and that is perhaps what the medrash means. Shoye amotchiach tzar tochacha is not talking about the guy's general personality. Because if he needed tochacha or other things that he did, it's not the mochiach. It's Chaim Yankel. Chaim Yankel needed tochacha before he was mochiach you, and he still needs the tochacha after he was mochiach you. I suggest that what the Medrash is referring to is that perhaps he's going to need tochacha for his tochacha. Because if you it says hocheach tochiach es amisecha velo sisa lav chet. Like you should give tochacha to your friend, but you shouldn't carry a sin with it. You shouldn't do it in a way that embarrasses him unnecessarily. It causes him too much pain. You know, the tochacha itself is very delicate. If you do the tochacha wrong, then you're going to need tochacha. So says the Medrash, you should give tochacha samach lemisa because you're most likely to do it right. Before we said that the person is most likely to be receptive at the time of Misa. That's the Sifri's version. There's two sides to the coin. Part of the reason why he's going to be receptive is because you're going to do it right. You're not going to do it for ulterior motives because you have no motives anymore. You're dying. And therefore, you are going to do it out of ahav, out of love, out of care, and out of concern. Lahodia shatochacha, maybe they show him tochacha when it's done this way, brings the tochacha. So we're saying it's not such a good idea to give tochacha in the middle of your life, because maybe you yourself will need tochacha for what you did. But maybe you didn't do it right. You didn't say it right. It's very difficult. But samach lemisa, it's much easier to give the tochacha properly, and if you give the tochacha properly, it will taka bring shalom. So I would suggest that the difference between the Sifri and the Medrash is the Sifri is focusing from the perspective of the Mekabel, that at the time of the death, the Mekabel will accept it b'shalom, and it'll be, as the Ramban explains, and therefore it'll bring lidei shalom. And the Medrash is saying the same thing, or more or less, but he's focusing mitzad the mochiach, that the mochiach will do it right. If the mochiach does it right, then of course the mekabel will also be more likely to be receptive. Now, what actually does the pasuk say? Vayikrevu yimei David lamus. You'll note an interesting thing. Until now, we refer to David as Hamelach David. If you remember the beginning of the first parak, Hamelach David Zakein Baba Yamin, here it says Vayikrevu David. It doesn't say Hamelach David. The Medrash Rabbah in Devarim says, from here, amongst other places, we learn, Ein Shilton B'yom Hamaves. There is no rulership on the day of death. This is the day of David's death. He isn't referred to as a melech. The trappings of Malchus don't apply to the day of death. Mefarshim point out an interesting thing. If you recall, we've had this issue come up several times before. What was the status of Shlomo after he was anointed king? When Shlomo was anointed king and David had not yet died, what was going on? So there are those who held that Shlomo really was the king. There are those who say that Shlomo was not the king. He could not take over the Malucha when David was alive. He was only anointed and he was you know, the Maisa was done, but the Chalos didn't take place until the death of David. If one learns that Shlomo was already king, L'chor, there's no kasha to begin with. The reason why the pasuk here does not say HaMelech David is because this is referring to David after Shlomo was anointed. David wasn't king anymore. Shlomo was the king. So of course it doesn't say HaMelech. So it would seem to me that this Medrash is another raya. I'm sort of trying to favor that side, but there are legitimate people who say both ways. But it seems to me that, at least according to this Medrash, is an indication that David really was the king. And therefore there's a kasha. If David was the king, then why doesn't the pasuk say HaMelech David? And the answer is, Ein Shilton B'yom HaMavis. The pasuk refers to the death of David as Vayikrevu Yimei David Lamus. The days of David drew near to death. We find this expression by Tzadikim. Vayikrevu. And Mefarshim explained that, you know, something drawing near sort of implies a certain amount of anticipation, where you're counting down to some exciting event. For a tzaddik, death is really a good thing. Maybe not for the people he leaves behind, but for he himself, it's a good thing because he's going on to Gan Eden, Olam Haba. It's a wonderful step up. So death is something that Be'etzim is anticipated by Yikrevu, looking forward to eagerly. Of course, in real life, one never knows for sure if you're that tzaddik. People don't look forward to the death, often for other reasons, but even tzaddikim don't look forward to the death because they can never really be sure what's going to happen in Olam Emes. I think we mentioned this concept before, that a person is judged in the next world not simply by his accomplishments, but by how his accomplishments compare to his potential. And therefore, even though it is possible for a person to be objective, of course, people are often biased about themselves and they think they've accomplished a lot more than they have. But even if you're objective and you measure and you can clearly indicate that you've accomplished a great deal, that still doesn't guarantee that when you come up to Shemayim, you're going to be in great shape. Because who knows if you could have accomplished twice as much. And therefore, we find that even great people were worried that they weren't going to make it in the Olam. Even Avram Avinu was afraid. He says, Al tira Avram scharcha harbe ma'od. He was afraid that he was not going to get any schar in Olam Haba because he got such a good life, he had such gifts in this world, and who knows if he deserved anything more. Avram Avinu was surely aware that he accomplished a great deal, but he didn't know whether or not more was expected of him. And therefore, it's very, very difficult for a person to really eagerly anticipate his death, even if he is a tzaddik. But the truth of the matter is, it is something to be anticipated. And therefore, by tzaddikim, we find the expression, by Yikrevu you may, in this case, David, lamus. Another point made was it says, you may David lamus. The days of David are dying, but David himself is not dying. The concept, again, we've mentioned before, tzaddikim, afil b'malsosam kruim chayim, that tzaddikim, even when they're dead, are called alive because the impact, the influence that they've had on the world continues after them. To this very day, we still say the Tehillim of David HaMelech. And we're still learning about David HaMelech, and his life still has an impact and still has an influence. So although the days of David are gone, he's no longer physically on the world, but to say that David himself died is not accurate either, because his influence and his hashpa continues on. So it says, Vayitzav es Shlomo b'no leimar, he commanded Shlomo his son, saying. So of course by now, you know, we're more attuned to the wording of the psukim. As we've been going through psukim, it should jump out at you. Shlomo b'no, Shlomo of course is his son, so the word b'no is extra. If he's the king, you mean? If Shlomo is the king, that's a good question too. My guess would be perhaps that maybe since he's addressing him as his son and giving him Musar, perhaps it wouldn't be appropriate to call him Melech, as he's treating him from a position of superiority. But that's my own chat. Mepharshim say b'no is part of the Musar. You have to realize, he said, that you're the son of David HaMelech, and you have a legacy. You have to live up to the legacy of David HaMelech. You have to be worthy of that name. And that could be a very, very powerful motivating force. One has to be very, very careful about this. Some parents have a tendency to throw this around. You know, the family name, reputation, whatever it may be. There is a very, very significant difference, and it may seem like a nuance, but it's really night and day into how this is presented and what is the intent of this presentation. Usually when people throw this around, they're not interested in the best interests of their son. They're interested in the best interests of themselves. I'm embarrassed if you behave improperly. That's a terrible message to send to a child, because first of all, it implies that if it wouldn't affect me, I couldn't care less what you did. It's me that I'm interested in, not you. And the message should be, and the feeling should be, sometimes it's not just a message, it's true, that they are concerned more about themselves than they are about their child. But if you're not, then you better make sure not to deliver such a message, because that has the least, even if it has certain short-term results sometimes, in the long term it breeds tremendous bitterness and resentment. And there's a feeling that all you care about is yourself, and you don't care about me. And this type of attitude emerges time and time again when people have difficult relationships with their parents. It often stems from this perception. You know, whether the perception is a reality or not, you know, could vary. But if a child receives such a perception, then it's counterproductive. And if it's a reality, then it's surely counterproductive. Because that's not the point. If you're giving a person tochacha, it has to be for the benefit of that person, not for yourself. And anything that's done for yourself is almost guaranteed not to be mekubal, not going to be accepted. And that's really what we said before, that the reason why tochacha should be given at the time of death is because then the recipient, as the Ramban says, knows that it's not for ulterior motives. So if you give this busa message, you know, the family name, what will I be able to say to my friends? What you're telling the person in not such subtle terms is, I don't care about you, I care about me. The message that David was sending Shlomo was not that I care about me. David's reputation will not be changed. But you yourself should feel it. You yourself should feel that you have a certain responsibility, a certain family legacy, something that you need to maintain for your benefit. So that you should be able to take the place of David HaMelech. That you should also be remembered as I am remembered. That you should also be alive as I am alive. So it is for the benefit of Shlomo that you should remember you're the son of David. And it's a tricky kind of business. If we try to use it, you know what they say, don't try this at home. It's not so simple. It has to be very carefully thought out if you're ever going to deliver such a message. I've heard, I know from the Rosh Yeshiva, from Rav Henoch Leibowitz, a number of times that he had told us that when, over the years, when he's building the yeshiva, and things were very difficult at times. There was ups and there was downs and downs and further downs, and it wasn't so easy. And he felt a certain thing that kept him going was the idea that he's maintaining the legacy of his father. His father came and started the yeshiva. There was a time that he was ready to close down the yeshiva, become a posek, and he didn't really have an issue. He would be able to make a parnasa, and there wasn't too many talmidim in the yeshiva anyway. He said, what do I need this for? And he felt that he could serve Kali Yisrael in a different way. And he felt that it would be a betrayal of the legacy of his father, who tried to start a yeshiva and was a mechanech and tried to bring chinuch and Torah to America. So that's what kept him going. And, Baruch Hashem it did, because now we see some of the peros, some of the results of what he was able to accomplish. So the motivation, the force of feeling that you're carrying on a legacy is a powerful force. But it has to be, I'm carrying on a legacy, not that the father is saying, listen, you better not embarrass me. You better not make me look bad. That doesn't work.
Does that come up stronger than Yom HaMisa?
Probably, yeah. That might be one of the things I didn't want to say before the Yom HaMisa. Now, we can't let a whole word get by without comment here. So we have the next word, lemor. Lemor in general is extra. You see that he's saying it. So what do you mean, lemor? So the Kli Yakar explains that lemor is a part of his instructions as well. What I am going to tell you, you should say over. You should review it. Because reviewing it, reminding yourself of it, has a positive impact. The famous Musa Sefer in Mesillas Yesharim says in his Hakdama that the main purpose, this is what he claims, he says, I wrote this Sefer not because it has Chidushim. He says, it's quite possible that you could learn the entire Sefer and hardly find any chidushim. I'm not exactly sure who he was talking to, who would hardly find any chidushim. But he seemed to feel that way. But he says, the main toelas of my sefer, he says, is to remind you of things that you may already know, but you need to review. And the ikar toelas doesn't come from learning the sefer once, but from reviewing it over and over again. This idea of repetition, hasmada, reminding, is the way you translate a intellectual understanding into an emotional feeling, into part of your personality. One of the biggest challenges in life in general is that most things that come up, you don't really have time or opportunity to sit down with a dispassionate analysis and figure out what's right and what's wrong. You know, most things come up on you by surprise. Usually you're caught up in things. Sometimes there's emotions that are playing, and you take actions. Who has the time and the luxury to sit down? We'll wait 3 weeks. We'll discuss it with a panel of rabbis. You know, we'll have a committee. You know, that's not how life works. So generally speaking, you've got to react to situations, and often what drives your reaction are your emotional feelings. Sometimes you might think about it later and wish you did it differently. Usually we just forget about it and go on to the next thing. So the way one really can be successful from a ruchnias, from a spiritual standpoint in life, is by training himself in such a way that the emotional reactions are proper. Not every emotional reaction is bad. Some of them are good, but it's hard to tell the difference. So you've got to make the concepts of Torah not simply intellectual thoughts that if you looked it up you could figure it out, but they become instinctive reactions. The Mesillas Yesharim calls it teva sheni, a second nature. And this requires various effort when shelo b'shatmais, when you don't have the challenges. And one of the tools and techniques to be able to accomplish this is repetition, is reminding yourself. When something is, you constantly remind yourself and drill it into your head, it becomes an automatic reaction. And then you're able to draw on that resource when you really need it. So this is really, according to the Kli Yakar, what David HaMelech was saying to Shlomo, Lemur, I'm going to give you a speech, but and actually it's a rather short speech, because afterwards comes the instructions, what to do about this guy, what to do about that guy. The speech itself is about two psukim long. So it's not so hard to repeat it, but it's something lamer that you should repeat to yourself over and over again, because then it will become part of your instinctive reaction, of your automatic reaction. If you have to look it up, you have to take out a Malachim, you know, open up the Sefer, look to Perek Beis, and read it, it's too late. Most of the time, that's not going to work. So the Musar concept of repetition is implied in the word lemur. And the pasuk continues, Anochi holech b'derech kol ha'aretz. I am going in the way of the entire world. V'chazakta, and you should strengthen yourself. V'yayisa l'ish, and you should be a man. Shlomo was rather young at the time. He may have been not even bar mitzvah, or just turning bar mitzvah, but he was becoming king. And he said, V'chazakta, you should strengthen yourself and be a man. What does that mean? The Targum says, U'sehele gvar dachel chetin, you should be a person who fears sin. We've had this before in the Targum, if you remember. He's been translating quite a few things like that, Yishchayo and so on. Because the ultimate measure of a person is his Yiras Chet. Radak makes the connection. What does it mean by Yishal the Ish? Be a man, and be a man means you should fear sin. So he says, Ish, be a man implies you should be Zaris, you should be, with vigor, you should have power, Moshel. So the greatest power, Moshel, is to be Moshel on yourself. Ezu, Gibor, Akovish, Asitza. And you need to be a Zaris. And I think what's implied here is another concept that we find in the Musar Sfarim, and in the Maseiros Yesharim for that matter, that you cannot be a Yirei Chet simply by attempting to avoid sin. A person could say, listen, I made up my mind, I want to be a tzaddik, I want to be a Yirei Chet, I'm going to learn Shulchan Aruch, find out what the halachas are, what's aser, what's mutter, and make sure I avoid everything that's aser. That's referred to in the Maseiros Yesharim's language from the Braisa of Pinchas Manyar as Zehirus, to be careful. It's good. It's a nice start. It is the first step. It doesn't get you there. Because whether you like it or not, as we mentioned before, these various emotions, the various feelings, desires, they worm their way in and they get you sooner or later. You might be pretty good, but you won't be able to be a Yirei Chet. To be a Yirei Chet requires a kumvaseh, requires action, zariz, umoshel berucha. You need to be a zariz, that means you need to look for opportunities to involve yourself dafka in Torah and mitzvahs. Because the influence that you have on yourself by doing something good raises your level and raises your strength. Mitzvah goreris mitzvah. So if you just play defensively, when the team gets the lead and they play defensively, they end up blowing the lead. So you got to keep on trying to score. So when you play defensively, you could, it works to some limited extent, but it's not enough. If you really want to be successful, you've got to be aggressive in your Avodas Hashem. You have to be a Zaris. Look for mitzvahs. If you wait for the mitzvahs to come to you, they may not come so fast. They tell a story about a certain fellow had a business, and he was very, very successful. And he passed away, and his son took over the business, and just didn't go. He was doing terribly. So he came to his rabbi and said, I don't understand. I'm running the business the same way my father ran the business. And he was so successful, and I'm not getting anywhere. So the rabbi said, so tell me something. What do you do? How do you run your business? He says, I opened the store at whatever time. I stock it with this and this merchandise. This is how I advertise. He gives them the whole thing, the exact same stuff my father did. And I sit in the store, I wait for customers, and nobody shows up. So tell me, he says, what do you do in the store when there are no customers? So you know, I read the newspaper. We'll modernize that. Listen to the radio. I think this was pre-radio, but read the newspaper. You know, relax or whatever it is. That's the difference. You know what your father used to do? When there were no customers in the store, he would open up a sefer and start learning. When the satan saw that, he said, "I better send him customers." So that's why he was successful. Son sees you reading a newspaper. What I got to send customers for? This is a machaya. The fact of the matter is, the satan will send you customers. And if you don't look for opportunities, dafka, to do mitzvahs, you're treading water. It's very hard to reach the madrega of a yirei chet. That's not going to happen. You might accomplish some things, not to negate it. It's worthwhile. It's a hiris. It is the first step. But to get to yirei chet requires more than that. That requires v'chazakta v'yisa le'ish. Zariz u'moshe baruch. You need to take positive action. Right, that's one explanation of the Chazak of Yisrael Ish. Of course, we're not going to have just one. The Mitzudas says Yisrael Ish is a simple tzivui that to be you're required to go beyond your years. Shlomo HaMelech was very young. So Yisrael Ish, you should be an adult. You have to behave older than your years, because now you're a king. You have responsibilities. We once referenced beforehand the explanation of the Sephardim of Yosef HaTzadik, who although at the age of 17 was more learned and beyond and wiser than all his brothers, yet in many ways behaved like a yelet. That's what Reuben said, al techetu vayelet. He wasn't able to be Rosh Hanola, to put things together. So wisdom alone is not maturity. Shlomo was a chacham mikol adam. It is true that at this point he didn't yet have the famous dream in Asma Chachma, but it appears that he was a pretty big chacham even before the dream. And the fact of the matter is that wisdom alone isn't enough. There has to be a certain maturity, a certain ability to put things together, Ra'as Hanolad, and often a very, very smart young child is still a young child and still behaves in inappropriate and irresponsible ways because he doesn't have that vision and that perspective. What's interesting as well, I think, in this Mitzudas is apparently it is possible to overcome that. Right? In the incident of Yosef HaTzadik, we say that even though Yosef was so great in so many ways, he still fell victim to this youthfulness and inability to see how things link together to Yiras Hanola. But apparently if a person strengthens themselves, because otherwise why is David giving Shlomo useless instructions? Be mature. What do you want from me? I'm 13 years old. Act older. How could I do that? If David is giving such instructions, apparently it's doable. Perhaps you need to be a king. You have to realize the responsibilities that you have. You have to be focused on it. But apparently it is possible. With that, at least when the responsibilities are in front of your eyes, it is possible to strengthen yourself and to overcome that and to get beyond your years. If it were impossible to do that, it would be a useless instruction. So therefore, according to the Mitzudas, what David is telling Shlomo is, look, you have great responsibilities now, you're a melech, and you're going to have to be mechazek yourself, you're going to have to focus and overcome your youthfulness and behave in a more adult and more mature manner. The Abarbanel, a third explanation, the Chazakta of Yisalish, and he connects it to the first part of the Pasuk, which says, Anochi Holech B'derech Kol Ha'aretz. What David is saying to Shlomo is, I'm not going to be around to help you anymore. And now you're on your own. Once you're on your own, requires a different strength. As long as you have a mentor, you have somebody to fall back on, to rely on, so it's a little bit easier. But when you're off on your own, it becomes more difficult. So therefore, it requires chizuk. Now, he says, you have to rely on the Kaddish Baruch Hu. And this is the lead-in into the next pasuk, which Hashem Elokecha, etc. You have to realize that there's nobody here to help you. but HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. Of course, Shlomo also has his advisors and so on, but in the end of the day, he has to make the decision. He doesn't. These are advisors, they're helpers, they're assistants, they're under him. But the ultimate responsibility is on Shlomo by himself. And he can't look up to somebody, so to speak, as a mentor. The truth is, at this point in time, Shlomo Melech's Rebbe was still alive, but he wasn't a mentor. Shlomo's Rebbe was Shimi ben Gera, and we will see that amongst the instructions that David gives Shlomo is to get rid of Shimi ben Gera. So it's not exactly that he could look to him for guidance, and David himself is about to pass away, and therefore the Chazak of Ish, so the Ish, you have to strengthen yourself, realize that you're the only one who carries the responsibility, and you have to turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for help, which is going to be emerge from the following psukim. Incidentally, he also mentions that why does the pasuk use the lashon holech b'derech kol ha'aretz rather than saying I'm going to die? So this was a little bit of a hint to Shlomo not to mourn me excessively. I had a full life, and it's normal, I have to pass on, my life is over, it's time for the next one. Here he's trying to tell Shlomo, you're on your own, I'm not going to be here to help you. That might engender a certain yish, a certain despair on the part of Shlomo. He'll mourn excessively, I lost David, I have no one to turn to. So to counter that, he also said, listen, this is the way of the world, it's happened before. You know, Yitzchak lost Avram, and Yaakov lost Yitzchak, and you go on, and the world goes on, and this is the way it is. I had my life, I had my opportunity to do what I needed to do, and now it's your opportunity. So at the same time that he was pointing out to Shlomo the challenges that he's facing and the chizuk that he needs, and you have to strengthen yourself and rely on the siyata d'shamayah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but realize that you're the only one who bears the responsibility. At the same time, I'm also downplaying it. I've been comforting you, said, don't worry, it's not the first time that it happened. It happened before, it'll happen again. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there, and that's the way of the world. So that he should not be overwhelmed by it, mourn him excessively, and therefore give up.